Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about black-owned businesses in the new D.C. What is the climate? Good, bad, somewhere in between? My guests are Jamal Watkins, vice president of the D.C. chapter of the NAACP, and Bo Sampson, owner of the VIP Room in Northwest D.C. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Omar, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, yes. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I really agree because African-American businesses are not welcome in D.C. And this has started back with Mayor Fenty. And also, once they put that baseball stadium in D.C., they basically just eliminated all black businesses out. They don't try to have any incentive for African-American small businesses to come to D.C. They always go for a higher business because they can generate more taxes and higher taxes. And if you look at this mayor plan, she has nothing. There's no plan to bring in any African-American business in or try to retain any African-American businesses in. And it's really sad. It's really sad.
Omar, thank you so much for your comment. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Charles calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for calling, Charles. What's on your mind?
Yes, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
Yes, sir. I just had a comment, you know, as far as like our climate in the United States right now, regarding, you know, minorities, I just find that, you know, it's a little difficult, man. You know, the you hear the brothers, man, they're trying to do it and they're trying to succeed in life, but we're fighting to help. You know, I love my Latino brothers too, but you know, but it's easier for them to come to the city and start a business. And then you got these brothers that's been here and they're facing so much adversity, man, trying to, you know, take care of their families and trying to grow. You know, and that's the part that's getting me, man. It's like whenever, you know, we're trying to advance, we're always getting pulled back.
Okay. Well, Charles, thank you so much. Before I go to another phone call, is what he's saying true, Jamal? Do you believe that other minority groups, perhaps, you know, Latino business owners, Asian business owners, or perhaps even some of the, you know, the Northeast African business owners that are immigrating here are getting a much more a fairer shake or getting a leg up as opposed to black businesses?
I would actually have to argue that, you know, any person of color, especially in this political climate in this country, we just saw what happened with the presidential election and national elections around the country, are actually not getting a leg up, so to speak. There is a racial divide in this country that has reared its ugly head post the Obama era that we now have to wrestle with, meaning the game has changed. And when I say that, I'm not saying that I believe that we can't pit black folks against Latinos, against Asians, because at the end of the day, the slice of the pie that each one of our communities has is extremely small still relative to the majority population. So what we're wrestling with is actually a fact that we can't fight over crumbs, because at the end of the day, the xenophobia around immigrants is very different but has the same effect as the blatant racism that black folks have had to face for, again, hundreds of years in this country. And I think what we're really pivoting to is that for each community, there has to be a consciousness around how do you strengthen the dollar in your own community? How do you build tools so that you can actually build more businesses and continue to grow the business footprint that you have? This also includes black banks and black-owned banks. And then the third piece is how do you make sure that the narrative is not, we don't want others to benefit, but it means that if we're not healthy and we're not growing our own, then we're actually losing something fundamentally in this country. So it's not that I disagree with the brother, but I would say that we're all facing a strong racial divide that actually over the next, you know, 4 years, at least while we have this current president-elect, is going to test our resolve around how do we do business in an era where race still matters and race is still used as a factor.
But you mentioned something earlier. You mentioned big box stores, for example. You mentioned Whole Foods. And we have seen, and it's not just in D.C., obviously, but in the surrounding area, there's a Whole Foods that's, you know, out just beyond the University of Maryland in Prince George's County. And the outcry from the minority communities, not in 2016, but I would venture to say in 1966, in 1976, in 1986, in 1996. When are we going to get the same high quality stores that the other communities have? And so can you have it both ways? If black folks don't own Whole Foods, but they still want to shop at Whole Foods, and they don't want to go across town to shop at Whole Foods, they want one in their community.
Yeah, and I think what you're talking about is actually economics when you think about scale. So Whole Foods caters to a certain type of income class, a certain type of audience. Now, you can have high-quality grocery stores, high-quality foods. We don't want food deserts in our community.
Exactly.
We've been fighting that for decades in all major cities around the country. But when you bring in a Whole Foods, you're actually pricing out folks from that market because of who the store is designed for. I mean, there's studies that show when a neighborhood is going to gentrify, you start to see, you know, sort of these pet shops that are high-end pet shops. Mm-hmm. Folks who can afford a coat, a winter coat for their dog, are sometimes not the same folks who live in that community. And so when you start to think about
it. But that's my point. And so, let us say that not all black folks live in the ghetto.
Amen.
Okay. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, there's a very, very small population of the African-American community in this country that lives in what we would call, you know, ghettos, inner cities, or what have you. But my question again is, even if it's not a Whole Foods, okay, but we still have black folks with jobs who get up every single day. They don't want to have to go, quote unquote, uptown for the good stuff that others have. So how do you address that?
Well, I think in from the perspective of the NAACP, it's about having an economic agenda and platform that's balanced. So when you think about it, 99% of working people are not wealthy. I mean, I work for the labor movement. That's my full-time day job. And so when you look at the statistics, most folks fall in this sort of working class continuum. So when you think about growing a neighborhood, yes, you want the goods and services that make sense. You want high-quality foods, high-quality access to services. But if it's pricing you out, meaning if it's intentionally being brought in goods and services that the market cannot afford, then when we talked about that conspiracy, that's a part of how you shift a neighborhood because you're pricing the majority of folks out. And so I would argue that most black folks want what you just said, which is access to the best things in life.
Quality
life. But it should not price them out of the market to where they can't afford to even shop at that grocery store in their neighborhood. And that's what we're actually seeing in many of the neighborhoods we're talking about in the D.C. area, is that it's an intentional, let's bring in these types of stores, because we know that it prices out the community folks who then have to drive and go far out to get those same goods and services that they otherwise would want in their neighborhood. So I think it's a balance. And I think the second thing I would say is that it's an economics argument, as well as when you think about the stores that come in, do they have project labor agreements where they're hiring locally? Are they actually giving jobs to local communities at scale? And so when you start to unpack all of that, we realize that we're not even getting the biggest bang for our buck with the new developments that are coming in. It's literally you're pushing out the folks who've been there because you're trying to bring in a new audience and a new clientele.
Let me go to the phone lines. Olivia, calling from Manassas. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I have a couple of things after listening to you guys, but I wanted to say, you know, I'm a small business owner in the area, in the North Virginia area. And I feel like, as you know, the government is pretty much sending us a clear message, and these counselors and these city counselors, and you know, it's very important for us to vote, but not just vote federally, but vote, I mean, not just during the presidential debates, but as well as just locally vote, because that does make a difference. But at the same time, as they're getting innovative with, you know, moving us out of our homes and raising the cost here and literally making things to a point where it's just not, like they don't want us there. It's forcing business owners to move away from the communities because they're buying them out. Then we should probably get innovative in the types of businesses that we own. Why can't we go after things like government contracts? Why can't we provide things like social media sales or whatever it is that you can do to get around that hump of that aspect happening, and then at the same time, take the money that you have and then invest it back into your community. So while they're buying us out, then we can then go in and buy them out
Olivia,
and in our community.
Olivia, I could not have said that any better. And I appreciate your phone call. And with that said, and this is a question for both of you, Bo, and I'll ask you first, do Black business owners, no matter what generation they come from, do they need a new attitude as it relates to addressing the business climate? Because we can sit here and we can say, as my grandfather used to say, the white man's just doing it to us.
Yeah, that's funny.
You know, or we can do it ourselves.
Well, we gotta come in a positive manner. Even though we went through some tough times, we got to work together. That's the first thing. If you don't have any customers, you can't do no business. So if we start working together and talking about what are some of the problems, what are some of the ways we could work together as a community, we'll do better working together than trying to be individually taking it on our own, you know, doing it by ourselves. Like, that's the reason why I reached out to the NAACP. Hey, can you guys got a track record of doing things? So what can we do to work with you to help us bring the small businesses together? You know, far as networking, far as talking about the issues, what are other things? People, you cannot have business if nobody in your community is shopping or going to your business. Like the churches, they're changing the zoning laws in the churches. So what they've done, if you can't park, you can't go to church. If you don't go to church, you can't pay your tithes and offering. If you can't pay your tithes and offering, you lose the church. And then the developers come in and they take that space. So they're working in, they're putting secret meetings together, and then they're executing. And that's what I believe.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Sade, I believe that's what it is. Calling from Laurel. Is that right? Do I have your name right? Is it Sade? Sade, are you there?
Hi, I'm sorry. Yes, it's Sade.
Sade, what's on your mind?
I don't have a question, more of just an observation and a concern.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, good evening, family.
Go ahead.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I noticed, so I'm new to the area.
From where? Where are you coming from? Where are you from?
Originally from Boston.
Oh, that's a long walk. Okay, go right ahead.
I've kind of taken it upon myself to look for more Black-owned businesses that I can try to reinvest my money into in the community and help that dollar circulate longer in the community. And I think you guys had mentioned this a little bit earlier in the discussion that there are still parts of the city where you can find, you know, restaurants and barbershops and beauty supply stores. But the struggle I feel like I've been having is finding businesses outside of those arenas. I can find tons of restaurants or tons of beauty supply places, but if I want to go, you know, and just do kind of an everyday thing, if I want to go to a grocery store, I'm not even sure if there's a Black-owned grocery store in the state of and do, you know, some girly stuff and get my nails done. I can't find a Black-owned nail salon. But these are areas where we're spending a considerable amount of our money. There's already large buckets.
Sade, you're breaking up, but I want to have Jamal try to at least address that issue. Obviously, you know about the story out of Chicago about the empowerment experiment from several years ago. We actually were the first news organization, a Black news organization, to cover that. And the family that was doing it did exactly what Sade was asking about finding all of those resources, Black business resources, to keep the money in the community. Sade, I need you to hang on so that we can see if we can get an answer from you. Also, Yolanda calling from Philadelphia and Akia calling from D.C. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold. We're talking about Black-owned businesses in D.C. and the business climate for those Black-owned businesses. Jamal, before the break, we were talking to a caller, and she was asking, how do you find black-owned businesses short of walking down the street and going door-to-door and asking?
Well, part of our campaign in terms of the NAACP Economic Empowerment Campaign in terms of strengthening black dollars is that we realize that there are some online directories, but they don't have enough information in terms of full coverage of the range of businesses. Like, you can go on a Craigslist or an Angie's List and find all types of businesses. There is no version of that, at least locally in D.C., that gets at the question that she asked. So part of our effort is literally to put boots on the ground and to put out all of the feelers so that we can identify a range of black businesses that are servicing the D.C. metro area. We know that there are contractors out there that are black-owned businesses. We know that there are financial operations, CPAs, bank accountants, folks who do personal taxes, who are running their own small businesses. We literally have an effort where we want to have a black business directory that is powered by the black community here in this city so that folks can actually find the range of services and goods that they need and not just be confined to one type of sector.
So if somebody's listening right now and they're hearing you say that and they, you know, own a black construction company with five employees and a vice president and a president, do they call the NAACP in D.C.? I mean, how do they initiate that contact?
If there's anyone that's listening that either is a part of a black business, owns a black business, knows of a black business, we're asking that you email us at economic@naacpdc.org. And that's economic singular at naacpdc.org. Our website is up and running, but we also have 1,600 plus dues paying members in this city that we're pushing out the call to action for them to help us identify locally what are the businesses in your community that are black owned, black led. Because what we're realizing is that sometimes there are businesses that are black owned, but the staff may look very diverse. So you may not even know it. And so we've read articles about some businesses even hiding the fact that it's black owned because they don't want folks to, you know, overtly use racism to say, we're not going to shop there because it's a black owned store. We're not going to use you because you're a black owned construction firm. But at the end of the day, we want to be able to tell the story and really map it out so that we can actually infuse strengthening dollars into those businesses directly.
And as always, I'll make sure that information is posted on the Daily Drum page of WHUR.com this evening after 8:30. Yolanda calling from Philadelphia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing
Hello,
fine.
Hello, Samson.
Okay, how you doing?
I'm actually calling you again from the Philadelphia area. And the number one thing is African Americans, we have to start working together. And the number one thing, we have to educate ourselves. I've been in my home 20 years. I have people knocking on my door, calling, sending letters, wanting to purchase my home. I see the neighborhood growing. And think about it. People have to start thinking, why are they doing this? 9 times out of 10 is for a reason to benefit them. I also wanted to comment about the VIP room. I'm very familiar with the VIP room. They've been in business for a number of years. I've been to a number of events, and it's always pleasant, always a peaceful environment. It's a beautiful facility, and they hold very nice events.
Thank you.
Okay. Yolanda, thank you so much for sharing from the city of brotherly love. I appreciate that. Aquila, I got your name right. Calling from D.C., what's on your mind?
Yes. Hi. Thank you so much.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that I'm a grad student studying sustainable development at SIC, and I was born and raised in Ward 8. And I just want to say that one of the strategies that we can offer, is that we need to think about social entrepreneurship. I think that we can leverage and save our black businesses and build a life if we start empowering our small businesses to address some of the social issues that are going on in the community that they serve. For example, youth unemployment and, you know, the high rate of marginalized youth. If we kind of deal with the social issues, maybe, you know, have some incentives to allow young people to come alongside and learn a skill, transfer an entrepreneur skill, then that will empower our black businesses to kind of, you know, have a little bit of leverage politically in the community. And so that's what I'm learning currently right now, and I just wanted to put that out there about social entrepreneurship and social innovation. That's what I'm passionate about. I think that that may be a strategy to kind of get our community back together. I noticed that on Willow Road they have something called hydroponics. That's, you know, dealing with a social issue with climate change and water, you know, conservation. And I think that, you know, I know that we love our mumbo sauce and our fried chicken and macaroni and cheese, and we love our jeans and our clothes and our shoes, but we need to think about some of the issues that are going on in our community that we're not addressing.
Okay.
And I think that our small businesses may be able to help empower that. I mean, we, you know, continue to support businesses that have bulletproof glasses.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just wondering from the NAACP perspective, you know, how do we, you know.
Well, let me ask him. Jamal, go ahead and respond to what Akilah was saying.
I would say, Akilah, and this is to all the listeners, when you think about social entrepreneurship, we know in our community, when we do good work for our community, that that is a business. That is work. And so a part of our approach in terms of how to start your own business toolkit is that we're looking at enterprises like starting a 501c3 not-for-profit, because that's a form of a business that can actually be used to apply solutions that are affecting a local community. We also know in the political world, there are businesses known as C4s that do political work in terms of advocating for different types of policy issues and campaigns. It's a form of a business, and it's not a tax-deductible business. And so when you think about this notion of social entrepreneurship, we've been doing this type of work for decades in our community, but we haven't quite figured out how to build the business infrastructure around it. We want to change that. And you're seeing this happen across the country where folks are saying, wait a minute, if crime is bad in my community, I don't have to just complain about it to the politicians. I can start an organization, generate revenue and resources to address that problem and solve that problem. And so we want to stretch sort of this notion of what it means to do business to include social entrepreneurship, because that's how our community has survived for so long and built for so long. But we want to also bring in the infrastructure so that it's well-funded, well-structured, and is sustainable.
Akilah, thank you so much for your phone call. We appreciate it. There is one thing I did want to bring up, and I said this off the air, and this is in reference to attitudes. We spoke about new attitudes off air, new attitudes for business models. But when you talk about gentrification, let us take LaDroite Park, for example. When I came back here in 2008, LaDroite Park was, majority African-American, very, very few white people there. But I remember, you know, talking to someone about LaDroite Park, and I made a comment about the beautiful architecture there. And the response was, I would never live here because the buildings are old. LaDroite Park now has those same old buildings, but they have been renovated, gentrified, whipped creamed, and cherried on top. And so those buildings are still as old as they always have been and getting older, but on the inside, they have been reconstructed. Is it not time for us to at least have also a conversation about the communities that are old here in the district that may be predominantly black, but could very well turn into classical architecture gold mines? And because everybody, and I'm a native Washingtonian, and you know, in 1968, after the riots, my parents moved out of D.C. into Prince George's because they wanted new. That attitude is still very, very prevalent with African Americans. They don't want to live in the city. No. They want to live in new. But see what they're leaving behind underneath those layers of paint. The burled walnut steps and the fireplaces and the marble mantelpieces and all of that stuff. They're missing out.
Yes, they are. They are definitely missing out. And it's kind of funny because my family, my mother and father, both of them, they always talked about, hey, you got to have something. When we establish something, we want you to have it and want us to pass it down from generation to generation. You don't have to move out. You can work with what you have right now and make the best of it. But people are so into trying to impress people, follow the crowd. Sometimes you can't follow the crowd. You got to see what's happening. And a lot of our black people do not do research. They don't do the research that they need to. Not everybody, but mostly.
Some final thoughts from you, Jamal, about how to turn this around. Obviously, this business conversation is a start, but it seems to me, based on what you've shared, that there is a broader issue.
I think when we think about the plight of the Black community in this country, we have to look at it from the different lenses that have affected us. We know racism is real. We just saw it play out in this presidential election cycle and a side won using race as a divide in this country. But we also have to think about the impacts of criminal justice and what does criminal justice reform look like? Education and education reforms, because these gentrified, you know, sort of projects also affect even the economic basis as it relates to education and how education is funded. We have to think about health care. We've been struggling with that for many years, and now we're faced with an ACA that may get gutted by a party that doesn't really understand that more people need health care, not less. And we also have to think about what it means to be politically active. Another caller said earlier, we have to vote our values and vote in a way that we've never voted before, because if we don't, we're going to see that the jewels that you talked about are going to be taken away from us, and we won't be able to recover from that. And so when I think about organizations like the NAACP here in D.C., founded in 1913 here in the district, 103 years old. It's a volunteer organization. I'm a volunteer. Our president, Akosua Ali, is a volunteer. At the end of the day, if we don't start taking ownership for our destiny, no one else will. And so I think as we think about all of this in a connected way, it's important for us to do the work, do the work, do the work.
Well, the event is going to be at the VIP room in Northwest D.C. Bo, what's the address again?
6201 3rd Street, corner 3rd and Rittenhouse.
Starts at 1 o'clock. How can small Black businesses survive in Washington, D.C.? Bo Sampson, Jamal Watkins, thank you both so very much. I appreciate it. Good luck on Saturday.
Thank you.
Right, thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, December 1st. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me on Facebook at Harold Fisher, WHUR, on Twitter at H Fisher, WHUR, or Daily Drum, WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2.